I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these teachings, and your support really makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering Dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So many years ago, the Lion's Roar magazine was interviewing the Dalai Lama about his daily routine and, you know, wanted to know what this, you know, master meditation teacher, what do you do? Well, what's your day like? And he told the reporter that he wakes up every morning at 3 a.m., right, to meditate. And so the reporter was a little shocked about this and wondered, you know, what sort of special magic powers this 80-year-old master had to allow him to, you know, get up at 3 a.m. every morning. And then the Dalai Lama admitted that he also goes to sleep every night at 7, right? Which means he's still getting his 8 hours of sleep. And in that interview, the Dalai Lama told the reporter, sleep is the most important meditation, right? Exclamation point. It is the common meditation for everyone, even the birds. The most important meditation, not for nirvana, but for survival. Another exclamation point. So it's so important to remember. As we all know, when we're not getting enough sleep or rest in our daily lives on a regular basis, it can really affect our lives, can it? Right? In so many different ways. It can affect our thinking about things. It can affect our moods and even our behavior, what we do. And all of these things, of course, are linked. And when the mind is affected by, or you might think under the influence of, a lack of sleep or ease or rest, it's very easy for us at that moment when we're sort of intoxicated by a lack of sleep. It's very easy for us to, just like when we're drinking, maybe, to fall into, slip into old, habitual, automatic ways of thinking and behaving. Or maybe reacting instead of calmly, mindfully responding. We just react automatically when we're tired. And unfortunately, this tends to keep us caught up in a cycle, right? Or a never-ending loop of being even more stressed, and then not getting enough sleep, right? Getting less and less rest. It's a cycle. Anybody been on that loop? Yeah. So whenever I'm sleep deprived, sometimes I like to remind myself that studies have shown that a lack of rest can actually be very similar to being drunk, right? And of course, there are many different levels of drunk, aren't there? Right? So, for instance, researchers have discovered that drivers who have had little or no sleep for more than 24 hours are no different at all from those who have had about 4 strong drinks and are too drunk to drive, right? And, you know, even a moderate lack of sleep can make us feel a little tipsy. You might consider this about, you know, driving. When you know, how much sleep have I had? Is this okay? But it's actually, the reason I bring this up is it's helpful for me to remember that a lack of rest can create a very similar effect in our minds and our bodies, right? So we're in a very real way under the influence of a kind of poison that is not making us think straight, okay? Think about it that way. And here you might recall that in the Buddhist teachings, we're told that we suffer from what are called the 3 poisons. The toxic 3 poisons, which are greed, okay, aversion, and delusion, those 3. And so this is one of the reasons why our sleep and our rest is the most important meditation, right? Why it's so important. So that we can keep our minds and our bodies more sober, you know, more awake, more clear, more lucid, and not allow ourselves to be so influenced by those more toxic states of mind. So all of this might seem like common sense, right? And I know some of you may have read some of these studies. But if we take a step back and take a more of an honest look, you know, getting rest might be something many of us don't really think about a lot or maybe pay a lot of attention to, right? It's like maybe we've convinced ourselves that we don't need that much rest, right? I don't need a lot of rest. Or maybe we can't allow our mind, body to rest or relax, right? Maybe not ever. Not during the day and not at night either. Not during the day. Can't rest. Gotta go. Gotta do. Gotta keep going. Can't relax. Right? We might think we have more important things to do than sleep. Right? Or maybe more important things to stay worried about. Because someone's gotta do it. Right? Gotta worry about that. And I've often heard this type of thinking. It's called resisting a rest, right? Resisting a rest. And here you might even imagine that when you can't sleep, you've in a way arrested yourself and you're resisting, sometimes fiercely, right? So if you can imagine, if you arrested yourself, maybe you're battling with the pillows, right? Punching the pillows or battling with the sheets. You know, you can get that just struggling, right, with it. The Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh tells us that if we're not mindful, this kind of struggle can become a habit, okay? He says, the problem is that not many of us know how to allow our body and mind to rest. We are always struggling. Struggling has become a kind of habit. We cannot resist being active, struggling all the time. We struggle even during our sleep. It is very important to realize that we have the habit energy of struggling. Okay? The habit energy of struggling. Just think about that one for a moment. Is it possible that you have the habit energy of struggling in some way? And if we begin to look a little more closely, most often, what we're struggling with when we can't rest or find a sense of ease in our lives, right, is what in the Buddhist teachings is called restlessness and worry. Those two are lumped together, restlessness and worry. And as many of you know, this is considered one of the five hindrances, those states of mind and heart that hinder our practice and hinder our ability to find ease and peace in our lives. That's why they're called the hindrances. And the other four is a review. I think I've gone over these sometime in the past year. The other four are sloth and torpor, which I love. I think I talked about that a few weeks ago, sloth and torpor. Along with grasping and clinging, right? So wanting, aversion, not wanting, and doubt. Those five. And really, if you think about it, all five of those really affect our ability to sleep because they all affect our ability to live our lives with more ease and peace. So they're all hooked together. And so we're really asked in our practice to be mindful, be aware of, remember these five because they're so important. Tonight, though, I want to focus more specifically on the hindrance of restlessness and worry, which includes things like it's an umbrella term for things like agitation, frustration, anger, nervousness, regret. That one will keep us up, right? Fear and anxiety. It's all under the umbrella of restlessness and worry. And as Thich Nhat Hanh suggests, in our practice and in our lives, we are being asked to make a conscious, concerted effort to recognize whenever we're struggling with this hindrance, right? To take a really intimate look at it and to bathe it in the light of our awareness. So often when we can't rest, The truth is, what we're struggling with isn't necessarily our restlessness, but with our aversion to whatever's happening, right? Think about that. Not wanting it to be what it is. Okay? Something to think about next time you find yourself struggling, right? Is it the actual restlessness, or is it the not wanting whatever's happening? So we're frustrated, usually, and we're trying to do everything we can to fight whatever's happening, which, of course, makes it so much worse, doesn't it? So that paradox. You know, it's that classic formula of, you know, that tells us that struggling with an already difficult or painful situation always makes it worse. It's already painful, and then we struggle with it, which makes it worse. So whenever we can't rest, and by the way, this is not just in your bed at night, right? I'm talking about just even during the day. That is what I'm talking about with rest. So when we can't rest, the very first thing we want to do is to use our mindfulness, sati, S-A-T-I, to simply notice that it's happening and to name it. Really important. So we might even think to ourselves, here's restlessness and worry. Just see it. Here it is. Or hello, insomnia. I see you, right? And by naming it or labeling it, we might then begin to notice that we almost immediately get a kind of distance from it. We've named it, okay? And here, it's important to remember that we're absolutely still feeling it. We're still feeling that restlessness and worry, right? But we're starting to recognize in some way that we are not that. We are not it. It's just something we're experiencing. When we can name it, we can see that a little bit more. You know, this tends to help us detach from it, which can almost instantly give us just a little more relaxation. It's like the shoulders drop. That's not me, right? I'm not that. It's just an experience that I'm having. So whenever we can disidentify with whatever's happening in this way, we can start to put down our defenses, right? Let go of our habitual defense strategies and just recognize our situation for what it is. And once we've recognized the situation and have maybe calmed down a little bit more, we might then just really explore what it feels like to be in this predicament in our bodies, right? This is what it feels like to be restless. So for instance, we might notice that the body feels jumpy or on edge, just jumpy, right? Or sometimes we might feel like we just want to bolt. We want to get out of the body in some way. We want to distract ourselves from being in the body. We might feel that urge to struggle, urge to move, get out, right? Our breath might feel really shallow, like we're hyperventilating. Our hearts might be pounding a bit. Notice that. Our minds might feel panicked, like they're racing and just can't stop, right? This is when our practice becomes really crucial, right? So we want to be able to really allow ourselves to feel this, which is unpleasant. But we want to get familiar with the feeling of restlessness so that we can know it when it shows up. And it becomes much less scary. And we don't need to identify with it so much. This is restlessness. And I know it because I've experienced it before. Just like you know a person. I've met that person before. I kind of know that person. I know what this feels like. And of course, this is the part of the practice that all of us want to avoid, right? The A part. Talk about this a lot. We want to escape the allow. And if you think about it, allow has the A, it's the A in the rain practice, but it has a point. Think about it that way. I like to think about it, it has a point. And it wants to poke us. You know, it's unpleasant. And it hurts. It can hurt a little bit. We don't want it. So we want to jump over the A, right? And get away from it. And get to what we consider the fix. which if you think about it, is not allowing at all. It's actually the exact opposite, which is another A word, which is aversion. So we're actually stabbing ourselves twice. We're not allowing that, you know, and we're not, and the aversion is poking us again. But the truth is, you know, the sad part is we can't get there to that place of freedom and ease until we actually allow ourselves to feel what we've been so desperately trying to escape. Okay? So we allow it, and we do this with great kindness and compassion. That is how we greet it. That's how we greet anything. We don't slam the door on it. We don't yell and scream at it. We greet it with kindness and compassion. Ah, come on in, you know. It's like we finally just surrender. We put our hands up, if you will, right? We surrender. And when we do, we might hear ourselves saying something like, oh, honey, or sweetheart, this is it. This is how it is now, right? And, you know, maybe it's, we can't sleep. There's insomnia. Ah, this is it, right? Just name it. We finally allow ourselves to let go and just allow whatever's here to be here, right? There might be sadness in the heart. There might be anger. There might be whatever there is. Regret. That's a hard one. Shame, right? This is it. After we've surrendered to the feeling and the body has calmed down a bit, that's when we can start to listen in a new way, right? It's like when we stop fighting and struggling so fiercely, we might be more willing to listen to maybe that inner guard, if you will, who has arrested us. Because really, who is it that's actually imprisoning us? Who is it that's imprisoning us? Right, it's us. In the suttas, our mindfulness is often referred to as a type of guard. And according to the teachings, this type of guard, or guard of mindfulness, always has our best interests in mind. This is how it's written in the suttas. And this type of guard, the one within ourselves, is actually considered empathetic and compassionate, and also wants to offer us some firm discipline as a way of protecting us, if you can imagine that kind of a guard. So you might even imagine that this type of guard really wants to discover what's going on and what's needed and is investigating us, right? Not in a punitive way at all. The investigation is not in any way punitive, but as a way to stop ourselves from causing ourselves or others harm, right? And struggle. So when we can listen in this way with and kind of kindly investigate, it becomes much easier for us to take a more honest look into the nature of our minds. We're more able to listen to what's going on in here, right? Where before, when we're struggling and fighting and fixing, there's no listening going on, is there? There's no listening. So we might discover, for instance, that the mind's running over the same topic over and over and over, saying the same things, maybe in different ways, but the saying the same thing. Just start to notice it. Maybe it's our to-do list, right? Which we might label planning. Just put it under umbrella. Planning, planning, planning. Maybe we're rehearsing or recalling a conversation or an interaction. Anybody kept up with that? And just plays over and over and over, over, right? We think that's going to help. Like, just figure this out. Maybe we're worried or fearful about something, and we can label this worry, fear. You can see it, label it, okay? It's really helpful to name it. It could just be the mind wandering all over the place, like we've let 30 cats out into a field, right? And we can label that busy mind. Ah, busy mind, okay? And whenever we're investigating the nature of our minds in this way, the teachings also urge us to ask ourselves some hard, honest questions about how we might be conducting our lives. And if you'll allow me to go with the metaphor of the guard, this type of guard, the guard of our mindfulness, is in a way inviting us to fess up to what type of misconduct we might have been up to lately, right? Which is absolutely going to affect our quality of sleep or rest and ease and peace in our lives. This is where the practice of sila or moral conduct really comes into play. We're being asked to honestly and consistently consider the five precepts, another five, right? Those things that we are asked to refrain from doing that bring more peace and happiness if we refrain. And these include, as a review, taking a life, okay? And this doesn't have to be taking a human life. It could be other ways that we take a life. You know, even killing an ant. Stealing, which means taking what's not been freely given, which can mean a variety of things. Sexual misconduct. Lying or harsh speech. And finally, using intoxicants. So, as a for instance, if you're having an affair with a married person, you're actually breaking three of the five precepts, which is lying, sexual misconduct, and stealing, taking what's not been freely given, what's not yours. And if you're getting drunk while you're doing it, you're breaking four out of the five. And then if you murder your spouse or your lover's spouse, that's five out of five. You're not getting any sleep. So, you know, we in the same way, we really need to become willing to ask ourselves, honestly, are we in some way harming ourselves or others through our action, our speech, our behavior, or even just with our thoughts, just in the mind? Just as a for instance, we can actually continue to harm ourselves by thinking unkind thoughts about ourselves. That's a way of constantly harming someone. You're harming yourself, which can keep you up. It's not restful, is it? To beat up on yourself so much? And of course, we can also harm ourselves by harboring hate in our minds and our hearts. You know, when we can't let go of something that someone has done, can't let it go. It's harboring hate, isn't it? Harboring aversion. And, you know, even something we ourselves have done, and we're hating ourselves and we can't let ourselves off the hook. That's another way that we harbor hate in the mind. And if we're having hateful thoughts about someone, even our own thoughts, you know, about someone, we're not harming that person, but we're thinking harmful thoughts. It's harming us, it's hardening our hearts, and it's going to keep us awake, right? It's not going to give us a lot of rest. Another question we might ask ourselves is, are we continuing to allow other people to do harm? Maybe through our lack of action, right? And, of course, this can also keep us awake. And just for a moment, you might consider, how well do you sleep when you're just not being honest about something, not being true to yourself or others? Okay. So just some questions to throw out, to think about, chew on. I recently saw a Facebook post written by someone who was arguing with the need to practice honesty as well as good ethics to find good sleep. And the post read, when people tell me you're going to regret that in the morning, I just sleep until noon because I'm a problem solver. I like that one. But all kidding aside, though, you know, this inclination to not be honest with ourselves or others is actually connected to a really common source of our restlessness, which is suppressed emotions. Okay? So when we're not mindful of our emotions as they're arising and passing in our daily lives, when we're in some way stuffing them or ignoring them, pretending they aren't there, instead of seeing them and allowing them and investigating them, what happens, of course, is that they're going to simmer under the surface, right? And this is going to create a sense of restlessness in the mind and the body, right? We're trying to hold it down, pin it down. So it's actually really good practice to start to recognize what we're not allowing ourselves to confront or take a good look at. Okay? And as most of you know, this is so much a part of the practice, what we're doing, which is learning to allow ourselves to courageously see these things, right? And as we do this, we might begin to notice that all these different forms of restlessness have something in common, which is whenever we're experiencing them, we are in some way either regretting or judging the past or worrying about the future. Think about it. Regretting or judging the past or worrying about the future. Anything you're struggling with, that is the case, isn't it? Always is. And as the teachings show us, the truth is our peace and happiness can only occur right now, in this moment. Okay? And so in order to free ourselves and find blessed rest, we need to practice unhooking ourselves from the handcuffs of our story, if you will, reminding ourselves to come back home to this moment, the present moment, to our body, this moment, right now, just as it is, however it is, and allowing ourselves to rest in that, rest in that, rest in natural awareness. That's where we find our freedom. So in the present moment, we can recognize that the worry or the anger or the fear, again, is not us. It's simply a passing emotion. It's simply a rising and passing thoughts and beliefs, right? Conditioning, which is likely not even accurate, right? And here you recall that when we're not rested, remember you're not thinking straight. Remember that. You know, we're a little bit drunk, we're tipsy, we're not thinking straight. So we're believing something that's probably not true, right? And we might remind ourselves that what's here right now is just simply natural awareness, the present moment. So what's in the present? If we're sleeping, maybe it's just the feel of our mattress or the sheets or the pillow. Maybe the sensation of warmth, coolness. The breath going in and out of the body, the sound of the crickets, or the wind, right? Or your cat slamming the bell onto the floor for the 10th time. You know, and that's what's here. And what is also here might be an ache in the heart, right? Or the experience of fear is here. Worry is here. Grief is here. Anxiety is here. That's present. That's happening right now, right? So we let it be, but without identifying with it, you know, without chewing on the narrative, you know, or trying to explain ourselves, if you will, to our inner guard. You know, we can remind ourselves that it is okay. This is really important. Because we so often make ourselves wrong and we want to fix it, right? It's okay that we're feeling fear. It's okay that we're worried or angry or feeling shame or regret or even exhaustion, okay? We don't want to add on top, pile on top. It's okay. We're human. We can remember that our thoughts and emotions are mostly based on past conditioning. They're not happening now. But they're creating the feeling in the present right now anyway. So it's that classic, it feels real in the present, but it's not true. Feels real, but we're creating it. It's not real, right? And because we're reacting based on our conditioning, you know, we can also hold ourselves and offer ourselves, bathe ourselves in kindness and compassion in the present moment while letting the storyline drop, okay? In the same way, in accepting where we are, we also don't need to strive to get to sleep, which is about wanting or maybe desperately grasping, right, to get to sleep, which is another one of the hindrances. It's wanting, greed, you know, clinging. And I find it really curious to consider the language that we use around sleep. So for instance, we say we're going to sleep, don't we? Which implies a kind of getting somewhere, going to sleep. And again, during our formal practice, what we're training ourselves to do more and more is to let go. And this includes letting go of striving, letting go of this notion of getting somewhere, like maybe to a higher plane or whatever we think we're going to get from meditation practice. That's a kind of striving. I like the way teacher Sharon Salzberg talks about this. She says, when we meditate, we are strengthening our letting go muscles, which are not frequently conditioned to train in our competitive work-focused culture. That is why I believe meditation is one of the most powerful sleep aids, right? Because it works our letting go muscles, which I like. So all of that being said, I want to actually end by offering you some very practical ways that we can use our practice when we really can't seem to fall asleep. We can't do it. And so one of the first of these is to go right to the shamatha, or calming aspect of our practice, which involves concentration, okay, shamatha. And we can do this just like we do in our formal practice. We might focus right on the breath, right? And focus on different aspects of the breath. That's going to help us drop the story because we're focused on the inhale and the exhale, temperature, the duration, flow through the body. I think I mentioned when I was on a retreat with the monks and nuns a couple of weeks ago or so, they advised us in the evening to figure out which breath we fell asleep on, the inhale or the exhale. Yeah, right? So you can place that much emphasis on the breath. Try it. And one of the wonderful things about the breath in our formal practice and at night when we're trying to sleep is that it brings us back again into the present moment. And the breath is always present. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here, right? The breath is always here. And so we can use that to drop the story and just go right to the breath. When we're trying to fall asleep, though, we put a little bit of a different twist on this sometimes, which is instead of focusing the attention on the nostrils and the chest, we might make a focus on the breath of the belly, since this is a very calming part of the body, the belly. So if you're having trouble accessing that part of the body, you can actually just put a hand there and notice the rise and fall of the abdomen. It can be very calming, okay? It's also really important to put the attention on the exhale, that letting go aspect of the breath, the letting go, and invite your mind and body to let go on the exhale, okay? So you can try that. You can try that even during the day, like if you're sitting in an office, just place the hands on the belly. Breathe in and then let go, just for 10 breaths. Try that, 10 breaths. Then if you want to go longer, of course you can. We can also use our concentration practice in another way, which is to practice the mantras. And I love this one. This is where the mantra that's suggested is the phrases of metta, right? Because a happy mind is not a restless mind, is it? A happy mind is not a restless mind. And so if we can offer ourselves kindness, happiness, compassion, that's going to really help. So with the metta practice, what I do is come up with three phrases that I want to use, right? And try to follow those phrases with the breath. So make it really simple. Don't make it complicated. So, you know, the phrases that I have been using lately, there's a couple. One is, may I be happy, may I be well, may I be free from fear. Really simple. And another one that I really like lately is, may I feel loved, may I feel held, may I feel cherished, right? Really sweet. And what's important as you're doing the phrases and repeating them is to see if you can sense that in the body, really feel it. That's why I like the, may I feel loved, may I feel held, because I start to like almost hold myself and feel that, right? And feel it with the breath, and it's kind of like a little bit of a lullaby, you know. And you can use your own phrasing. Those are just some that I've come up with, okay? Use your, whatever you need, offer that to yourself. And it's an invitation, right? So you're not forcing yourself. May I? It's an invitation, not you better, right? It just doesn't work. It's also really helpful as you're reciting the metta phrases to, again, just like we do in practice, to put a slight smile in the lips and the eyes. You know, there's some science around that it actually brings happiness and calm to the body. Okay. Another way we can practice is by broadening our focus of attention, same as we do in formal practice, right? So we might open up to sound, you know. Let that be the focus of our attention, because that's in the present moment, right, still. And you drop your story, come back to sound. You might even open up to the sense of the body as a whole. You know, feel the body, experiencing sensations within and without. Also, with the formal practice, we can start to consciously still the body, right? Because when we're restless, the body, like I said, it wants to move, right? It wants to wiggle. It wants to change postures. It wants to get out. It's going to be really helpful to quietly calm the body and let the body just become still. Like, avoid some of those urges and heavy, still and heavy. Avoid some of the urges to have to fidget and see if that helps, right? Another fun way to practice when our minds are really busy with some kind of story especially is to slow the words down. So you literally, like you're in outer space, you slow the words down. And it makes me giggle with whatever my story is, right? To hear myself say it, the same thoughts that I'm having in that kind of language. You are an idiot. You know, just... Just try it. Tell me how it goes. And, you know, the whole idea with all of these more practical methods is that it helps us to get out of the jail, our prison, of our thinking mind, you know, and out of the dream of the past or the future and into the present moment. And again, it's helping us to let go into the freedom of right now, the present moment, which is, as always, the only place that we can actually find real peace and ease. So I think I want to end there and offer you to end just some of those classic metta phrases and help us all calm down for sleep this evening. So I'm going to invite you all to settle. And so just taking a nice deep breath in and out. A couple of rounds of these. And for this one, I am going to invite us all to place one hand on the heart and one hand on the belly so that you're connected to both. So breathing in, just feel the rise and fall of the chest and the abdomen. breathing all the way down into the belly. See if you can even expand the belly a little bit more so you can really, really feel the breath in the belly. Letting the shoulders drop. Softening the face, and just imagine the skin around the body softening, loosening. Sensing the breath. Letting the body get heavy, so especially the sit bones and the feet. Can you just let them be heavy? Letting go. Maybe adding a slight smile to the eyes and the lips as a way of bringing kindness, friendliness. And then I'm going to offer you some of the phrases to you. See if you can just recite these, but in the mind, and also really invite these into the heart. Really sense what that would feel like, this offering to yourself. May I be peaceful. May I be well. May I feel safe and at ease. May I be peaceful. May I be well. May I feel safe and at ease. Or whatever words you'd like to use. And each exhale, see if you can let the body settle a little more into more ease and softening. You might even try on the words, may I feel loved. May I feel cherished. May I feel held. May I feel loved. May I feel cherished. May I feel held. Really offer that to yourself. Whatever words resonate. And finally, just listening to these words from Nyoshil Kenpo Rinpoche, who writes, rest in natural great peace, this exhausted mind, beaten helpless by karma and neurotic thought, like the relentless fury of the pounding waves in the infinite ocean of samsara, rest in natural great peace.